did you watch the speech?
I watched as much of it as I could stand. Well, a little bit more than what I could stand. I couldn't believe what I was saying, especially this part. Listen. Obama said, from this desk 7.5 years ago, President Bush announced the beginning of military operations in Iraq. Much has changed since that night. A war to disarm a state became a fight against an insurgency. It was not a war to disarm a state. And the dishonesty in the first half of that sentence, pretty much, I've said this before, but for me, places Obama right up there in the category of people who, for some reason, once they assume political power to this degree, become liars. That is a lie. It was not a war to disarm a state. I can't believe that Barack Obama really believes that anyone watching his speech tonight believes that, with the exception of the teabag freaks, the Beckoids. They would believe that. But, Mr. President, if you're going to talk like that, why not just, you know, why ask the networks for time? Why not just go on Fox and say that kind of garbage? 7.5 years ago, President Bush announced the beginning of military operations in Iraq. It was a war to disarm a state. And then he says it became a fight against an insurgency. How about a little explanation there, Mr. President? There was no insurgency in Iraq. There was nothing in Iraq except a dictator that we had put in power and shored up his power for decades. And when he was no longer useful to us, we decided to go kill him, which we did, which we've done many times. Any insurgency, Mr. Obama, was an insurgency against us, because we were committing war crime after war crime after war crime. He also said, a little further in his speech, this afternoon, I spoke to former President George W. Bush. It's well known that he and I disagreed about the war from its outset. Yet no one could doubt President Bush's support for our troops. What? Bush didn't give a damn about troops. Or, the president added, his love of country. What? Bush loves one thing, himself. And, Obama said, Bush's commitment to our security. I mean, this is madness. If anything has made this country 1,000 times less secure than it was in the year 2000, it was George W. Bush. Bush didn't love this country. Bush loves the oil business as long as somebody else absorbs the losses. Bush doesn't give a damn about this country. When he had a chance to go fight for it, he turned tail and ran like a scared rat. And so Barack Obama says that George W. Bush supported our troops and loves his country and has a commitment to our security. I will be double damned. I mean, this is madness. He also said, throughout our history, America has been willing to bear the burden of promoting liberty and human dignity overseas, understanding its link to our own liberty and security. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Mr. President Barack Obama? Is that what this war crime against Iraq Is that how you're identifying it? Promoting liberty and human dignity overseas? Are you goddamn kidding me? Liberty? See, Mr. President, you nor I nor probably nobody on earth will ever know how many Iraqi civilians we, the people of the United States, incinerated. It's easy to figure out how many people we incinerated at Dresden or the firebombing of Tokyo, but we will never know. Why? Because early on, the American command that had committed a horrendous war crime against another nation said, we don't do body counts. Throughout our history, Mr. Obama said, America has been willing to bear the burden of promoting liberty and human dignity overseas, understanding its link to our own liberty and security. Really? I was hoping. No, I wasn't hoping because I knew it never happened. I was fantasizing, better word, that at some point in this half-assed speech that Barack Obama gave tonight that just turned my stomach, I was hoping at some point he would stop looking at the camera as though he was looking at a corpse and just loosen his tie and say, hold on just a minute. We have been involved in a 7.5-year-long war crime. I will make sure that the perpetrators will be brought to justice. Now, goddammit, get the camera out of my face. Excuse me, that's 2 GDs in less than a minute. I'm sorry. But Barack Obama is now part of this conspiracy of lies. I mean, does he not think that there are millions of us out here who know that what he said tonight was not true? Not from an historical standpoint, not from a moral standpoint, certainly not from a standpoint of U.S. security. But no. Barack Obama has joined the ranks, and for those of you liberals who are expecting that Barack Obama is going to do something in his second term. Good luck. I think I read that in a Nation magazine, one of the essays recently. Was it The Nation? Where, yeah, okay, he's been a less than progressive president for the first 2 years and will continue to be less than a progressive president. He's just laying the foundation. Do you really believe that? Even the example of Roosevelt was used, because Roosevelt, during his the first couple of years of his presidency, if not his whole first term, was, by the standards applied to him now, historically, were a failure. Until finally, the labor movement prevailed upon FDR to get his ass in gear and do what the people of this country needed. But there is no labor movement now. There is no progressive movement. There is no liberal movement. There's a bunch of half-assed teabaggers running around the country talking about how God shows up in geese. We'll be right back.
And we learn so much more about the good guys.
Bo, bo, bo.
Won't you stand by the flag? Was the question unasked. Won't you join in and fight with the allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old.
With 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold.
This kind of life makes that violence unthinkable.
We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow small.
Thank you. synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. You know, there's a phrase that is popular right now that just irritates the hell out of me, and the phrase is the new normal. Don't you just hate that? Because it's usually used in the context of explaining to us why things are all screwed up and they're not going to get better. And hence, it's all the new normal. And like I said, I hate the phrase. I really do. It's popping up all over the place, in the print medium, on the web, all over the place. But I'll be damned if what I heard tonight from the President of the United States is not precisely that. The new normal. Nobody, and you might as well get used to it. We all know that every single Republican office holder is a damn liar. I think it's time that we get used to the fact. I know a lot of you are way ahead of me on this, I understand. But maybe we ought to get used to the fact that every politician, and by politician I mean anyone who seeks public office, is a damn liar. Up to and including St. Barack Obama. And now, what do we do about that? What do we do about it? Well, there's a couple of choices. We either work our asses off for the next 15 or 20 years and change the system, or we just check out. I don't mean check out like in a permanent sense. I don't mean leave the country necessarily, although that's certainly an option. I just mean get over it. It's not going to happen. It being a return to some mythological time in this country in its recent history where, you know, the country was good and wonderful and clean and corporations treated the American consumer with respect and the American consumer played his role. And I mean, forget it. No sooner did Obama get halfway into his speech, a third of the way into his speech, and he's talking about the economic situation in this country. And yet, Barack Obama just a couple of months ago proposed the biggest war budget in the history of this republic. So it's garbage. It's lies. And it's sickening to know that we simply do not have, nor apparently will we ever have at this point, the new normal is kicked in. We will not have ever again an honest person. Think of the people who might run for president in 2012. Go down the list in your head. Go ahead. I know there are, on the Democratic side, probably very few people will challenge Obama. But just fantasize about all the people who might run for president, either party. Yeah. I rest my case. This is from Joe Walsh. He's with these veteran, United States Navy, Individuals for Justice, Veterans Against Torture. The president's speech was another slap in the face of the anti-war peace activists. He should now be impeached. In the first 10 minutes, he congratulated the war criminal Bush. He talked about peace in the Middle East without having the key players at the table. It was and is a joke without humor. It would seem the big difference between Obama and Bush is the ability to put a sentence together. They are brothers in blood. Within the first 15 minutes, he did connect the dots involving the war and our economic mess. Most citizens will not even know what he's talking about. Not much for us progressives. Obama continues to call for cooperation, working together, etc., etc. The conservatives, the Republicans, are screwing him every day, and he wants to continue to be nice. He used his record on veterans affairs to build some kind of cooperation. There are veterans on the streets of Portland, Oregon, sitting on the curb because they can no longer sit next to a building. Reports that I have read say about 25% of people on the streets are veterans, and that will increase. He talked about the American soldiers who have given their lives for this immoral occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. What about the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, Mr. President? We are murdering, torturing, and we have made millions homeless in and outside their own land. Iraq is our shame, not our victory. If we were land of laws, President Obama would be impeached. President Bush would be arrested with Dick Cheney. Judge Jay Bybee, John Yoo, and many more of the architects of the war and the occupation would be serving life sentences. But alas, we are not a land of laws. We are a place of the buck. All our institutions are in peril, I feel we have gone off the cliff, and it's now just a matter of how much damage will occur when we hit bottom, and we will hit very hard. The speech to the nation was a terrible presentation of who we are trying to be. I'm so disappointed and angry with President Obama. Signed, Joe Walsh, United States Navy, Veterans Against Torture, Individuals for Justice. You can go to Joe's website, individualsforjustice.org. We'll be back after the break. And there's something I'm going to play for you that you're going to, this is probably the longest bit of audio that we've ever had on the program. Two reporters from New Left Media attended the event Saturday in D.C. and interviewed some of the attendees. Chase Whiteside conducted the interviews, Eric Stoll and Casey Hosp on camera. This is going to blow your mind. Stay with me.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, this is rather lengthy piece of audio we're going to play for you. And again, if you look at any of the videos where you see a pleasant but serious-looking young man with a head of dark hair walking among these crazy people, with his microphone asking questions. This guy, his name is Chase Whiteside. He certainly is a brave young man. Casey Hosp, is that it? H-O-S-P? And Eric Stoll were the two camera people. Now, obviously, we can't show you. Well, I guess we could on... Well, no. We can't show it to you because this is radio. But we will post it at our website. We'll post a link to it at the website. But I want you to hear the questions and the answers. Now, in this first one, there are five cuts here. Here's the first one. Chase asked people, what's this rally all about, and why did you come here today?
What's this rally all about, and why did you come out for it?
Well, I came out, well, it's my standard answer today. I came out to stand with like-minded people who have strong opinions and similar opinions, and really to pray under God in D.C., to stand out here and to stand together and show people we're not crackpots.
I think it's about taking back America.
We got to stand up and take back our country.
Take it back to what we believe it used to be. We just don't like the direction it's going.
Yeah, just restoring honor and freedom, and kind of help the White House people to understand that, you know, we need to... we need to work for, freedom, and, just the things that are going on in the White House right now are just absolutely insane. And, it's becoming, it's just America, it's kind of more becoming, communist, socialist. It's crazy.
Our doorstep in this country is extremely dirty, and it needs straightened out before we go straighten other people's up.
If we go down, the world is going down behind us. And as it's proven now, the world follows our economy. Except now for China, for example. They're doing very well.
We're the only nation like this in the world, and if we lose this, there's nothing else.
This is the last bastion of hope, okay? And right now, we're on very shaky ground.
You don't think there's any other bastions of hope in the world?
No, I don't. No, I don't.
Canada, maybe?
No.
No?
No. Okay. This is the last bastion of hope right here, okay? Right here. America. Okay? God shed his grace on thee.
The communist in the White House. Want to take the country back. And my question is what it has been ever since these freaks have materialized out of the ether, these teabaggers. Where were you cowardly bastards 6 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 7 years ago? In the next cut, Chase asked these attendees about the criticism Beck received for holding the rally on the same time, date, and location as Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech.
A lot of people on the left are criticizing Glenn Beck for holding this on the 47th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. Do you think that's silly, or do you think there's a concern?
No, I think it was in a very appropriate day, because we all have a dream here now to bring this country back together.
Do you think there's some similarities that can be drawn?
Sure.
How appropriate to have this gathering on the day that Martin Luther King said, I have a dream.
It's not insensitive, and the issue with Al Sharpton, who's going to bring his Black Panthers here to meet us here and cause some kind of an incident, is wrong. Because Al Sharpton doesn't own the day. The black people of America don't own the day. The African Americans don't own the day. Nobody owns this day. Okay? It's not just
like we
freedom.
Don't own George Washington as an occasion. No one owns George Washington, and no one owns Martin Luther King.
Really? Okay, so it's a matter of ownership. In the next one, Chase asked if... We got time for this? Yeah. Chase asked if it wasn't hypocritical of Beck to hold his rally on this anniversary, given the fact that Beck called Obama a racist with a deep-seated hatred of white people.
A lot of what people were concerned with was that the person who was speaking on the anniversary from the same place was also someone who had accused Barack Obama of being a racist with a deep-seated hatred for white people. And so they're saying that they have a problem with that. What do you think about that? What do you think about
Glenn Beck said that?
Glenn Beck said that.
I don't think so. I don't think you're getting that wrong.
You don't think Glenn Beck said that Barack Obama was a racist?
No, I don't think he said that.
You think he said that?
I haven't heard him say that.
Yeah, do you know about Glenn Beck having said that Barack Obama was a racist?
I never heard him say he was racist. I've never heard Glenn say that.
Yeah.
I've never heard him actually be disrespectful to the president.
Glenn Beck is not going to say that. You're just turning words around here. I know where you're at, and I ain't talking to you.
You didn't hear that Glenn Beck referred to Obama as a racist?
No.
No, I didn't.
We'll tell you what we did find today.
If I heard that, I'd believe it. Because he is a bit of a racist and a bit of an elitist.
I agree with him.
And why is that?
Barack Obama has done nothing but separated this country and caused blacks and whites against each other, and that's not fair.
How's he done that? How's that?
A long list of things.
Okay, you have to read his books because it's in there. His dad has a deep-seated hatred against white people. Okay, and as far as any of his other ideologies, I can only tell you that, like the scripture says, out of the abundance of a man's heart, so he speaks. If he's going to take the time to write that stuff down and put it in the historical record, then something is going on.
I can't believe this country would elect someone so anti-progress and pride of America that would willfully destroy the country and divide us so sharply on the issue of race.
Yeah.
I don't want to believe that. I'm not prepared to believe that our president, who represents all of us, would do that.
I agree with the birther people that I don't think he's even a legalized citizen.
Yeah. And do you think he's a Christian?
I think he's Muslim in heart. He only joined the Christian church in Chicago for political gain.
I don't think he has faith in our country. I don't think he believes in our country. I don't think he ever did.
Now, that's a big thing to say, though, to say that, you know, he ran for president, he didn't believe in the country.
Well, if the shoe fits. That's just my opinion, and I'm an American, and I'm allowed to have my opinion.
Absolutely.
And I do have freedom of speech, and the way the current government is going, I'm not going to have that freedom.
Where has the current administration started to take away freedom of speech?
Well, you're not allowed to pray at the monuments anymore. Now, what's the deal with that?
Oh, my God.
You're not allowed to pray in the you're not allowed to say the Lincoln Monument.
You're not allowed to pray at the Lincoln Monument?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
We were just told about that the other day on the news. So, I mean, it's a lot of little stuff like that I think is stupid. And one day we're not going to be able to do what we want to do. And they just need to back off.
Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Now, this is not about Beck. This is about the mentality or the capacity, the mental capacity of the people who attended this event on Saturday. Are you listening to what these people are saying? It's astonishing. I realize that Joseph Goebbels wrote the book on this stuff 80 years ago. I understand that. But I never thought that the American public would be this stupid in these numbers, this incredibly mind-bogglingly empty-headed. Listen to what these people are saying. That they are stating as facts as they know them. And when you see the video, you will see the facial expressions. You'll see the body language. It's incredible. When Chase Whiteside, the young man asking the questions, when he pushes just a little bit, like, who told you you can't pray at the Lincoln Monument? Oh, it was on the news. When you see him push just a little bit, and then the panic in the faces of these dolts, these people who are going to elect, or think they're going to elect the next president, it's incredible. It's incredible to watch, much less listen to. And we have two more cuts when we come back. And again, at some point this evening, we will, unless Kathy already has, have you put this up yet? Not yet. We'll put the whole 13-minute or whatever it is video up so you can take a look at it. And it's astonishing. All right. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
Heroes who died just doing what they do. Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer and look at yourself? What really matters? I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things He gave us, and the greatest is love.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Okay, back to this video from New Left Media, where Chase Whiteside, who is the interviewer, conducted the interviews, and the two camera people are Eric Stoll and Casey Hosp, and Kathy has the entire thing up at our website now, MikeMalloy.com. Here is cut number four. Off camera, Chase asked the attendees about the mosque controversy. Here we go.
They want us to take a slap in the face by putting a mosque up there near Ground Zero. Well, how many mosques are in New York right now? Well, there's a bunch of them. Why do they need another one? Just to slap us in the face?
Islam is not just a religion.
they couch it in it being religion, but it's not. It's a lifestyle.
Do you want to be slapped in the face like that? I don't think so.
It's economic. It's judicial. It's religious. It's a comprehensive lifestyle. So when you buy into the Islam religion, it's everything.
It's not that they can't build a mosque. They just don't need to be building it right there and thumbing their nose up at us.
And do you think that's what they're doing by building it?
I know that's what they're doing.
I think it's sticking the eye in the American people. What, 3,000 people died there? By Muslims.
Muslims are sticking a thumb in our eye and saying, there, what are you going to do about it?
This has nothing to do with an olive branch. It has everything to do with building a victory monument for their outlandish attacks upon America.
They've taken down those towers. Right. And by taking down those towers, they've shown to the world that they've had victory over America and over the devil of the West.
We don't want this to become another Mecca. Whereas there was a Muslim victory here, okay?
To put that right there, not only smacks the families in the face, but America in general. It just doesn't belong there.
How far away do you think it should be built?
Closer than 3 blocks. No, further away than 3 blocks. It's 3 blocks right now.
Yeah, but 4, is there...
How about 100 miles away?
How far away do you think it should be? What would be like a good distance to put it?
They have more mosques in New York City than you shake a stick at. What the devil do they need another one?
Wherever they have achieved a victory, they build a mosque and what have you.
What is the name of that mosque? What is the name of that mosque? It's the, help me, Bill.
I don't know.
It's the same name as the one in Spain.
But some might say that what's happening is they're confusing radical Islam with more moderate Islamic factions.
Yeah. I learned all I needed to know about Islam on 9/11.
I'll bet you did, Sparky. I'll bet you did, didn't you? We got time for the last one? 2 minutes and 35 seconds. Okay, Chase asked the attendees what they thought needed to be done about immigration in this country.
What do you think needs to happen with immigration in our country, and why do you think it's a problem?
Let's just enforce the laws that are already on the books.
It all brings it right around in full circle, how the Indians felt when the white man came into this country. How they felt? I know how they felt. I knew how they felt before this, but it's really coming out to light now as to how they felt.
It's a health risk. Vaguely recall, I think at Ellis Island, you had to go through. No, you did. You had to go through as an immigrant a health screening. We have no idea. No idea what's coming into the health safety of the general population.
If they want to come into this country, do like the old immigrants did. They were proud to come here. And they learned to speak English after they got here. Yeah. And they were proud to learn.
And you don't think a lot of the immigrants that are coming over are proud to come here then?
No, they're just coming for a free ride.
I caddied for many years. I watched guys who used the system. They came up only in the summertime to work in the country clubs, and they would send all the money back to Central America and then go back down in the wintertime and live like kings.
They'll slip in, have a baby, and then we're going to support them. They're going to slip back across the border, take their money with them, and come back and forth as they please, because this one here is a citizen.
When you come over illegal, intentionally pregnant, to have the child born here, this way the child becomes an American citizen, and then therefore the parents have to stay as well.
If you just come across across the border just to have a baby, then that's wrong.
No, a lot of, because it takes still 21 years for you to file. If you have a kid here, it takes 20. Your kid has to be 21 years old before they can file for your parent to achieve residency.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So it just seems strange that people would be coming over to have a kid and then wait 21 years for residency.
Well, All I know is what my sister tells me. She lives in Arizona. And she says she has seen people waiting in parking lots, pregnant women in parking lots, just waiting to have their baby.
Oh, that's it? People waiting in parking lots. That's what the woman's sister in Arizona told her. People sitting in parking lots, pregnant women sitting there waiting to have their babies. I mean, there's nothing I can say about what Chase Whiteside and the people at New Left Media, invariably they get this stuff. It's incredible. I mean, Chase Whiteside is, I don't know, he's right up there at the very apex of in-your-face journalism. Good for you, Chase, Eric, and Casey, and New Left Media. Kathy has posted this thing, and I want you to look at it, because when you see the video, when you actually see what these people are like as they answer these questions, it's astonishing. We'll be back. Take some calls if you want to call in. 877-996-2556. And coming up next hour, we have just a whole list of stuff, kind of a potpourri that we're going to get into. So if you want to chat, now's the time to do it. Roz writes, Mike, when Obama says the U.S. must show respect and dignity when overseas, I guess he said that tonight. One should ask, why are they overseas in the first place? And how about the million-plus Iraqis that have been displaced, lost their homes and family members, or just left the country as refugees? It's a bit late in the day to contemplate politeness. When they dismantle that Vatican-sized U.S. embassy in Iraq and pull all the troops out and not replace them with mercenaries, then maybe I will believe that hostilities are over. But let's call a spade with an embassy that big. It can only be for one purpose, to administer over most of the Middle East eventually and to house and protect corporations and government personnel. They lie through their teeth to the people, Obama especially. The degradation of the U.S. and everything it touches in recent years is appalling, Mike. The opposite of the Midas touch. If only we can get back to, quote, the old normal, end quote, that would be a cause for celebration. Roz. I just wonder sometimes what the old normal is. I don't know. I am totally dazed and confused. Dazed and confused. Another lashing in the Middle East. A singer, a guy who sings, who performed in front of a mixed audience of men and women, felt the lash 39 times to make him, quote, repent after a ruling by a court on Wednesday. The judicial panel, chock-a-block with religious leaders, sentenced this man to 39 lashes in order to, quote, rid him of his sins, end quote. In a video clip of the court posted on this website, a spokesman for the court said that those who make others sin, such as artists who make men and women attend performances or dance together, have no place in the world to come. The spokesman displayed a leather strap he said was made by his father from ass and bull skin, the animals, with which the man was to have been whipped. The man said, "I accept upon myself the lashing for my sins." He was ordered to stand by a wooden pole with his head facing north, quote, from whence the evil inclination comes, end quote, his hands tied with azure-colored rope, which is a symbol of mercy, and received his sentence. Everybody in this story are Jewish. Yeah. It's a rabbinic court. This was in Haaretz, or no, I'm sorry, Jerusalem Post. Rabbi Amnon Yitzhak, founder of the Shofar organization aimed at bringing Jews back to religion, has made it his recent mission to fight against musical performances that are attended by both men and women. he has a judicial panel with Rabbi Ben Zion Mutsafi and another member, and they sentenced Eretz Yechiel to 39 lashes. So it's not just the Muslims, is it? I've said before, and I'll say it again, and you already know it. Once you deeply or delve deeply enough into a religion where you get down past the, oh, love, oh, peace, oh, look, there's God's face in the clouds. Once you get past all of that nonsense and get to the heart of the matter, when you get down to the fundamentalist level, Christian, Jew, Hindu, Muslim, it matters not. They are all vicious. They're psychopathic. Every single one of them. Now, you may say, hey, Malloy, it's not your business, not your religion. That's not the point. The point is, this kind of craziness is what's eating the world to pieces. 39 lashes with a leather strap because the guy sang songs in front of an invited man or male and female audience. They're all nuts. All nuts. Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent, has a quick note here. Mike, Beck's insanity is causing me to have bad flashbacks to my youth when I was part of a fundamentalist church, the New Apostolic Church, which claimed that its leaders, and only its leaders, were God's spokesmen. These preachers never used pre-written sermons because the Spirit, quote-quote, spoke through them. With the exception of one or two, they would stand behind the altar and preach material that was both ridiculous and dangerous. That's why when Beck made the following statement, I snapped to attention, quote, I'm only writing a few bullet points, and I'm doing that so I don't get in the way of the Spirit in case he wants to talk. If you would just pray that I would be able to hear, because sometimes he's screaming at me and I still can't hear it, end quote. As a child, Kay writes, I was indoctrinated to accept what I was taught in church as, quote, God's truth, end quote. But as I grew into adulthood and couldn't ignore my doubts and questions any longer, I had to face the reality that what I believed was not only BS, but extremely hazardous BS. I now know that the church leaders who claimed to be God's spokespeople were actually a group of megalomaniacs who literally had Messiah complexes. When I think back to the things that they preached, the things I believed, I often berate myself for having been so blind. But after that pathetic spectacle at the Lincoln Memorial this past weekend, I no longer have to be ashamed that I spent the first three decades of my life following a bunch of mentally ill crooks and liars, because I saw Beck followers in much later decades of their lives who will very likely never recover from their delusion. Take it from someone who's been down that same blind alley of belief in men claiming to be God's messenger. This stuff is effing scary and dangerous. Religious fanaticism, religious fundamentalism, it is the absolute destruction of everything. It always has been. It always will be. World without end. Amen. I have a moment with Bob. No, it's not a moment, but an email from Bob that we'll get to a little bit later. Dave is in Chicago. Hey, Dave.
How's it going? About New Left Media and the work that they did over the weekend.
Uh-huh.
I've bumped into it time and time again on YouTube where these Republicans, conservatives, especially Tea Party guys,
right,
get all upset that they think that the smart ones hit the cutting room floor and they only put the stupid ones on. And that's why I did the Tea Party Crasher deprogramming program that we spoke of about 4 months ago. Yeah.
Right.
That's why I did that one, so that I could get a whole group of several hundred all acting and saying and doing the same thing at the same time.
Right.
Those guys at New Left Media are terrific.
They are.
Just terrific. They've got like a million and a half hits from the previous Tea Party, and
When I went to this website today, it only had about 300 hits so far, but it's going to get a lot more. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you checking in.
Coming around. If you're smart, then you better start dumbing it down. Don't say anything too profound. Dumb it down.
Liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Betty is in Albuquerque, listening on KABQ. Hello, Betty.
Good evening, Mike. I told your lovely wife, and I'd like to say it again, with total respect to her, I love you. I love your show. I love what you both do for everybody. And I have to say that I find your anger a very healthy response in regards to everything that's going on. And you're a catharsis for me. I called in once before, and I told you that, and I'm reiterating. As far as these people that were interviewed at this Beck rally, to me, they're nothing more than testimony to the grandest, most successful agenda that the Republicans have ever orchestrated, and that would be the utter dumbing down of America.
Oh, my, yeah.
Which actually started, Kathy did mention Fox News, and yes, they have a relatively large part in this, but it really started with Reagan and his dismantling of the public education system. It's mm-hmm. all gone downhill from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's astonishing. Betty, thank you, and I'm honored that you listened to the program. Thanks a lot. It's just almost impossible to cope with listening and watching these people that New Left Media just find so easily at these rallies. These people, the depth of the ignorance, not just the stupidity, but the ignorance. And what is incredible to watch is when, and you'll see this when you look at the video, they will find one or two people, man or woman, who obviously are just totally enamored of their own point of view. They go on and on and on and on and on, and nothing they're saying is really, it's not reality-based. Everything they're saying has either come out of the mouth of Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck. And because of that, none of it is true. And yet they have incorporated this stuff into their worldview of the president, of the country, of the economy. I don't know. And you can watch some of these people who... This is why I want you to watch the body language. As they talk to Chase, as they talk to New Left Media, the confidence in what they're saying, even when it's gibberish, even when it's like the woman who says, well, my sister told me that all these pregnant women go to parking lots and they wait to have a baby, for God's sake. And what I did when I watched that particular video, you know, I'm searching the faces of these people. Granted, it's just a video. I'm not there, but I'm searching their faces to look for the darting eyes or the batting eyelids, just any indication that they're scamming Chase, the interviewer. And it's not there. They believe this. This is their worldview. There are, I think, 16 or 17 tells to know that somebody's lying. My old Italian grandfather told me that. He did. It came from the old country. And you look for those tells. You look for them. And these people don't display them. They believe this. Unbelievable stuff. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
All right. How are you?
Oh, I'm just trying to recover.
Yeah, I hear you.
I get a mental image when I hear those interviews of a man or a woman standing there with those spiral eyes, you know, like you used to see in the cartoons.
Right.
It's just unbelievable.
I know.
I had a brother like this, or have a brother like this. This is sociopathy.
Yeah.
This is mass sociopathy bordering on psychosis.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, these people are so threatened by what they don't understand because of their lack of knowledge.
Right.
That they are prepared to sell America to hang on to whatever beliefs they have that they have been raised with to believe in, regardless of whether they're right or wrong. It doesn't matter. It's the only thing that is comfortable to them.
And that's one of the reasons these people hate the scientific method and will choose blind religion every time, because the scientific method requires that you constantly challenge whatever conclusion you think you've come to over and over and over again. A scientist, a research scientist, will question his or her findings, no matter what those findings, no matter what field it's in. I find myself doing the same thing, and I think most people with any level of intelligence will do that. You're constantly checking to see what part of your belief system has become nonsense, mush, because of newly revealed facts or new information that you incorporate into your worldview. These people don't do that. It is too threatening. It is way too threatening. So they're like, no offense to Germans, but they're like the good Germans in the 20s and 30s. They desperately were looking for someone to tell them what to think. They found it. Thanks a lot, Chuck. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Good night.
Rage, Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Okay. From Bob Alexander at superbeans.com. Mike, it was almost a year ago when about 60,000 to 70,000 crazy, stupid white people attended the Teabagger Taxpayer March in Washington, D.C. Conservative pundit liars like Michelle Malkin grossly inflated the numbers of crazy, stupid attendees anywhere from 300,000 to 2 million. A photograph supposedly of the massive turnout was instead a photo of the Promise Keepers rally from 1997. Imagine that. The right wing lied and then lied again to prove that their first lie was really the truth. These guys are awesome. It's the same way that food poisoning sometimes produces spectacular results. A couple of months later, Michelle Bachmann's anti-healthcare reform rally drew about 10,000 crazy, stupid people. When Bachmann was out gassing about the event with Sean Hannity on Fox, she said the attendance figures were somewhere between 20,000 and 40,000 people. In the Fox tradition of lying to their audience, Fox showed two-month-old footage from the Teabagger Taxpayer March and passed it off as video from Bachmann's rally. That's the kind of journalistic ethic that makes the White House Correspondents Association vote unanimously to give Fox News a front row seat in the White House briefing room. Through the efforts of timeless and dedicated reporters, we all found out about Hannity's switcheroo on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. Last Saturday, we were visiting relatives in Canada, so we missed the media coverage of Glenn Beck's Teabagger extravaganza. When we got home last night, I immediately turned on the computer and the television to see what we missed. Well, what we really missed was the next to the last episode of the third season of True Blood on HBO. So we watched that first. As soon as we were up to speed on what was happening with Suki Stackhouse, I started Googling around to see how many crazy, stupid white people showed up to restore America's honor by trivializing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s galvanizing I Have a Dream speech. Somewhere between 78 and 96,000 ignorant louts attended. I guess if you promote the crap out of the Teabagger event day after day after day on Fox and promise insane headliners like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, you can probably get 60, maybe almost 100,000 crazy, stupid white people to show up. And the media will deem it a newsworthy event. It helps to have the deep pockets of the Koch brothers plowing piles of cash into the Teabagger movement to keep it going and on message. How else are they going to keep their grassroots movement green? It also helps that mainstream media just loves them some Teabaggers. Their cameras roll if only a couple of hundred crazy people show up protesting the black man in the White House. Now that's news! In 2002, 4 months before Bush illegally attacked Iraq, over 100,000 people marched on Washington. But you wouldn't have known it if you followed the news. 5 years ago, 150,000 people protested the Iraq war in Washington. And again, the mainstream media was nowhere to be found. According to the French academic Dominique Regnier, between January 3rd and April 12, 2003, 36 million people across the globe took part in some 3,000 protests against the Iraq war. But in this country, that's not news. Corporate media want us to believe the Teabagger movement is representative of the American will. It's not true, but that doesn't matter. The stage is being set for the November midterm elections. Between now and then, we're going to see something we've never seen before, thanks to the Roberts Court. Virtually an unlimited amount of corporate money will be spent on candidates the corporatocracy wants elected. And an unlimited amount of corporate money is going to be spent on candidates the corporatocracy wants defeated. As Robert Perry wrote in Consortium News last week, quote, according to almost all media accounts, American voters are on the verge of rewarding the Republican Party for its determined efforts to block Democratic job-creating efforts and President Obama's other modest reforms. Amazingly, Perry goes on, Wall Street leaders, after getting salvaged by government intervention themselves, are calling for more Republicans in Congress to prevent government initiatives to help other Americans get back on their feet. There is a strange consensus emerging that, for want of a better phrase, gridlock is good. So, is the United States about to take yet another flyer with the Reagan-Bushism? With Reagan-Bushism, the government is bad ideology that has dominated the nation's precipitous decline over the past three decades? Has the right's media power left Americans so confused that they have forgotten how the country emerged from the Great Depression and built the great American middle class with a combination of government infrastructure building and private enterprise? Have the painful lessons of George W. Bush's administration been forgotten already? Philosopher George Santayana famously said, quote, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," end quote. But he surely didn't think that the people of a modern nation would forget their own history in less than 2 years, end quote. Robert Perry. "I would like," Bob writes, "to think that we really do remember what happened to us just a few short years ago, but I also know that untold millions of dollars are going to be spent on wiping out that memory. The media are giving these crazy, stupid, racist teabaggers airtime for a reason. The Koch brothers, Fox News, Glenn Beck, and the rest of the fatuous gas bags have manufactured and inflamed discontent. The teabaggers are the face of that discontent. Unparalleled amounts of money are going to be spent stuffing the heads of stupid voters with more lies and craziness. What's going to happen on Election Day? Will the AstroTurf teabagger movement hand control of the country back to the Republicans at the ballot box? Will millions of corporate dollars befuddle enough Americans into believing that restoring America's honor means they should vote for Republican oligarchs? I would like to think that come Election Day, the teabagger movement and their candidates will fail and deflate like a leaky whoopee cushion. But what about all those no paper trail voting machines that have been stealing elections for Republicans over the last 10 years? After the polls close, when all the corporate campaign money has been spent, after the latest teabagger media circus has aired, and if the bogus voting machines were used, will a swarm of yahoos be swept into office? Will some highly paid haircut tell us, "The people have spoken," and then cut to a triumphant, teary-eyed close-up of Glenn Beck? That's just about one of the scariest things I can think of. Regards, Bob. My, my, the boy sure does right, doesn't he? He's right up there with Mark Morford, too. And who's the guy I read the other night? And they're not all guys. They're some great women writers, trust me. One produces the show here. Arnold is in Durham listening on Sirius. Hello, Arnold.
I know a better way of saying that. He's an on-time Bob. Yes, he is. Man, I'm telling you, man, it was jaw-dropping when I heard you say that video today. It was jaw-dropping, man. I mean, I was like some kind of science fiction, science fiction movie or something, you know.
Can you believe that? Movie. Can you believe
watching
that?
The Night of the Living Dead, and my neighbors all walk around like zombies, you know. After listening to Fox News, they turn into zombies. My grandmother said back there in the 50s, you know, when we first got a TV set, she said, "Boy, don't you be looking at this TV so close up to it, because it enough your brain."
Yeah, my mother told me the same thing.
Maybe Fox is putting gamma rays into their television.
It's putting something. It's putting something, Arnold.
But these people are sick. These people are sick. I'm gonna tell you what, Mike. If these Nazis get back in control, man, we are doomed. We are so doomed.
Do you know how to speak Canadian?
I'm thinking Australia, man. I'm thinking of getting on a boat, and if I run out of money, maybe even just like.
I'm trying to learn Canadian just in case.
Well, I can change my accent. Say, "All right, mate, I'm here. I'm over here." They'll say, "Well, where are you?" I'm gonna say, "I'm an Aborigine."
All right, Arnold, I gotta go, man.
I'll see you, buddy.
All right, thanks, Arnold. Appreciate it. Arnold is going to be an Abbo. No, I don't think so, Arnold. Steve is in Burbank. Hello, Steven.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Arnold's one of my favorites. He's one of the elites who gets in with Kevin and Frank with Dave Marsh.
There you go.
I love him. It was a monster. It was a monster on the lecture circuit today. That is, delivering car parts and talking to the small businessmen.
Oh, yeah?
And the mosque controversy, naturally. One guy is actually going to go out and protest against the community center being built. And I tried to reason. I tried to rationalize. No, zero, zero. And I go to another place, and I relate the story of the previous guy.
Yeah.
And he used a word, a phrase, and that phrase was common sense.
Common sense?
He said it's common sense for the Muslims to not build a community. And I said, common sense, gee whiz, common sense.
Hey.
And I tried to say, I'm sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, hold on a minute, I got to do a commercial. I'll come right back. Just stay there. I'll come right back, Stephen.
If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Nobility are famous for no reason. Mary Antoinette enjoyed her king. Because the revolution will be won, not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. His makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should have fixed the novel smoking light.
Stick around, final hour coming up. Potpourri is stuff. Don't you dare go away. Back to Stephen and Burbank. All right, where were we?
Common sense, just like Tom Paine, only I didn't read it.
Yeah?
Having a brain like a sloth, you know, whisper something and think about it for a year, it took me half a block to come up with a pithy aphorism, and that is, there is no common sense in the destruction of the rule of law when that rule is predicated on a reason for law.
That's not
is justice.
That's not an aphorism. That's the opening chapter of a book.
What book?
No,
I don't remember if I read it.
No, that's yours. I'm just being a smartass. Aphorisms are usually short and pithy. That's long and interesting.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, that's all right. That's what I say. It sounds like the opening few sentences of a book. Write the book.
Okay, people are telling you to do that. People are telling you to run for office, and I'm finally getting
back
to it.
No. Hey, Stephen, whatever you do, don't run for
office. I'm not. I tell them this. Here's what you do. You come up with $2,300. You get five of your friends all there. And when I get $750,000, I'll take to the podium, and I'll get the signatures, and I'll make an ass of myself.
Well, you can do that, or you can just ignore it, because when you decide to run for public office in this country, immediately the cosmic hoo-ha sticks a straw in your ear and starts to suck your brains out.
Yeah.
So, you know, write the book, but don't run for public office. Promise.
I won't. Definitely not.
Okay.
Not.
All right, I got to move on, pal.
Okay, boss.
Thanks, Stephen. I appreciate you checking in. Steve in Laverne, California writes, Mike, we really fell through the looking glass with the election of 2000. With the theft of our democracy, there was no movement. When we were led into Iraq, there was no movement. When the Bush crime family were accruing more and more executive power, there was no movement to take our country back. Yet these inbred imbeciles are convinced the country is in peril with Obama. Nothing is based in reality anymore. I think of the end of the Moody Blues' Knights in White Satin, the part that says, red is gray and yellow white. Steve in Laverne, California. Yeah, you know, I've always believed, up until recently, that ignorance is curable,
and stupid is terminal. But in the age of the teabaggers and Palin and Beck and Hannity and the rest of these clowns, it is becoming very clear to me that I was wrong. Stupidity is as or ignorance is as deep and hard to move through as ignorance, especially when it's willful stupidity and willful ignorance. It's just it's almost impossible to deal with. Because, you know, like you, I was around as an adult during the 8 years of the Bush crime family. And like a lot of normal people, I just about lost it watching what this criminal enterprise, Bush and Cheney and corporate America, what they were able to pull off, what they were able to do to a country that was teetering on the brink anyway. And these rat bastards just stepped up and gleefully, with laughter, kicked us over the brink. Remember the White House Press Association dinner when, I don't know, what was it, a year after our war crime against Iraq, and Bush is up there and he has the video. Oh, there's no weapons of mass destruction here. Or are they over here? How about under here? Are there some under there? No? How about over there? And the sons of bitches all sat there and laughed. They laughed. How funny is it? 4,400 Americans dead, 40,000 grievously wounded, a million and a half, 2 million Iraqis dead over the past decade. Is that funny? Or the past 2 decades? Is that funny? You know, Obama or whoever talks about this war for 7 years. That's a filthy lie. This war has been going on for almost 20. When was the first time we invaded Iraq? Right. The largest protests in the history of the human race, truly documented, were the protests against the Bush crime family's war, invasion, occupation, war crimes against Iraq. Bush crime family the second. And a lot of you, and Kathy and I, a lot of people, protested. We did what we could in the using the old style of taking to the streets, putting ourselves out there, carrying a sign or not carrying a sign, gathering together in solidarity against what we knew was potentially one of the worst war crimes since Germany invaded Poland in 1939. We knew that. We knew that. And it didn't matter. It didn't make any difference. You know, that's hard to deal with. It really is, and it gets harder and harder to deal with this ignorance, this gross ignorance and stupidity that is just flooding the country. It will be what brings this country to an end. It's the ignorance and the stupidity, and you know it, and I know it, and it probably isn't that far off. And that really pisses me off, you know? It really pisses me off. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
6 and a half past the hour. As promised, some of the crazier... I don't mean crazy in the sense of fun or funny or oddball, just stuff that's in the news that tends to make me crazy. I would imagine you too if you pay any attention to this stuff. It's hard to continue to pay attention to it, isn't it? And I just wonder, you know, going back to that video we played earlier, the video and the audio that we played earlier of the people at the... at the big event in D.C. last Saturday, how many of those people, I wonder, understand what's going on? As you listened to that, didn't you get the same impression I did? They don't know what the hell they're talking about. NATO says four more American troops were killed in a roadside bomb explosion today. This brings to 18 the number of U.S. soldiers killed since Saturday. And that makes the month's total 53. Since today's the last day of the month, I guess, in this bloody game of counting how many people died, how many American people have died, how many, how that compares to other months, that means that... we are behind July, which was the bloodiest month for U.S. troops since the invasion. 66 were killed. 66 of our people who will never, I mean, this is obvious. I don't know why I'm saying it. It just, it destroys me. It really does. 66 young people, mostly men, I think they're all men, who will never, ever, ever see their families again. Their children again, if they were fathers, their nieces and nephews, if they were uncles, their parents, never. And again, the question, why? Why are we doing this in Afghanistan? Other than for the satisfaction of corporate America. If you would have asked those teabaggers that we played for you earlier tonight, if you would have asked them, why are we in Afghanistan? What do you suppose the answer would have been? You know what it would have been, don't you? So, 53 American young people dead in Afghanistan this month, 18 since Saturday. Bob Herbert, writing in the New York Times, says that... well, when he wrote this, 14 American soldiers had been killed in Afghanistan over the past few days. He writes, "We learned on Saturday that our so-called partner in this forlorn war, Hamid Karzai, fired a top prosecutor who had insisted on fighting the corruption that runs like a crippling disease through his country." Time magazine tells us that stressed out, depressed, and despondent soldiers are seeking help for their mental difficulties at a rate that is overwhelming the capacity of available professionals. What we are doing to these troops who have been serving tour after tour in Afghanistan and Iraq is unconscionable. Time magazine described the mental health issue as, quote, the Army's third front. End quote. With the reporter, Mark Thompson, writing, quote, "While its combat troops fight two wars, its mental health professionals are waging a battle to save soldiers' sanity when they come back, one that will cost billions long after combat ends in Baghdad and Kabul." End quote. Herbert writes, "In addition to the terrible physical toll, the ultimate economic cost of these two wars, as the Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz and his colleague Linda Bilmes have pointed out, the total cost, the ultimate cost, will run to more than $3 trillion. You know, that's a lot of money to spend to go kill people in a country where we demand they turn over to us access to their natural resources. I'll be damned. I'll be damned. Do you realize how long it will take to get that money back? Of course, here's the thing. We've talked about this a million times.
The costs are socialized. The profits are privatized. That's the way it works in a capitalist society like this one. The corporations insist that American young men go to Afghanistan and kill and be killed and have their brains just completely scrambled. And as far as the $3 trillion cost, who do you suppose are going to pay for that? It'll be the taxpayers. Who are the taxpayers? It's not the wealthy. It's not corporate America. Who are the taxpayers? Yeah, that's right. It's you and me. This is infuriating. But it goes on. It just doesn't stop. It's a shame we do not have an administration who would see the insanity of all this as you see it, as I see it, and just say enough. But we don't have that kind of administration. Bob Herbert says, I get a headache when I hear supporters of this endless warfare complaining about the federal budget deficits. They're like arsonists complaining about the smell of smoke in the neighborhood. There's no silver lining to this nearly 10-year-old war in Afghanistan. Poll after poll has shown that it no longer has the support of most Americans, and yet we fight on, feeding troops into the meat grinder year after tragic year. To what end? This is madness. This is insanity. This is madness. General David Petraeus, the commander of forces in Afghanistan, during a BBC interview over the weekend said, quote, clearly the final chapters of this particular endeavor are very much yet to be written, end quote. He sounded as if those chapters would not be written anytime soon, didn't he? Huh? In a reference to Obama's assertion that U.S. troops would begin to withdraw from Afghanistan next July, General Petraeus told the BBC interviewer, quote, that's a date when a process begins. Nothing more, nothing less. It's not the date when the American forces begin an exodus and look for the exit and the light to turn off on the way out of the room, end quote. Well, as Herbert writes, a lot of Americans who had listened to the president thought it was, in fact, a date when the American forces would begin an exodus. The general seems to have heard something quite different. In truth, Herbert writes, it's not at all clear how Obama really feels about the awesome responsibilities involved in waging war, and that's a problem. New York Times' Peter Baker wrote a compelling and in many ways troubling article the other day about the steep learning curve that Mr. Obama, with no previous military background, has had to negotiate as a wartime commander-in-chief. Quoting an unnamed advisor to the president, Mr. Baker wrote that Mr. Obama sees the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq as, quote, problems that need managing, end quote, while he pursues his mission of transforming the nation. Wars are not problems that need managing.
C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Are you familiar with World Vision, a Christian humanitarian organization? At one point, I was a contributor to that organization, that one, and Save the Children, and Amnesty International. I've not been able to contribute to any organization other than Amnesty here lately. But World Vision, I always considered to be one that was a direct action organization. I don't know. Now I get this from the Religion News Service. This is what it says. World Vision, the Christian humanitarian organization, can fire employees now who disagree with its theological tenets. A federal appeals court ruled on Monday, August 23rd. In a 2-1 decision, the Ninth Circuit said that World Vision is, quote, a religious corporation, end quote, religious corporation, and therefore exempt from a federal law that bars faith-based discrimination. One of the judges' opinion, quote, I am satisfied that World Vision has met its burden of showing that the general picture of the organization is primarily religious. World Vision is a nonprofit organization whose humanitarian relief efforts flow from a profound sense of religious mission, end quote. Now, that's interesting because in all the World Vision commercials or ads that I've seen on television, I have yet to hear a that I'm aware of, maybe I just blanked it out, but I've yet to hear a pitch for religion. What I've heard is a pitch for contributing to the physical salvation of people in disaster areas or in the slums of cities around the globe. Just, you know, the pitch has always been humanitarian, and as far as I was able to hear, completely secular. So now it turns out that World Vision has a right to fire employees who disagree with its brand of religion. Now, this decision, according to the Religion News Service, this decision comes as President Obama is weighing whether the government should help fund religious charities that refuse to hire people of other faiths. Well, knowing Obama now, after a couple of years, of course he will. He doesn't take a stand on this kind of stuff. He says, oh, well, you know, I don't, you know, I believe in the Constitution or some such bat crap. He's sounding more and more and more like the teabaggers. In fact, White House officials have said the Justice Department is studying the matter. And decisions will be made on a case-by-case basis until a final decision is rendered. World Vision praised the Ninth Circuit ruling in a statement, and they have the statement here, but I'll be damned if I'm going to read it. That's to me, that's a shame. You know, to say that a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, a psychologist, a child specialist, an epidemiologist, a worker, somebody who's willing to haul bags around or unload, offload trucks or airplanes bringing relief, that those people have to pass a religious test, or World Vision now has the right to fire them, to me is, well, I wouldn't pass their religious test, therefore no more money from me. Poor old secular humanist atheist Mike Malloy. World Vision has made itself clear in celebrating this ruling by the Ninth Circuit that they don't want my money. Okay. Not that I have been a recent contributor, but there was always that thought. They've been around since, what, 1950, the 50s someplace. But there was always that thought in the back of my mind, well, eventually, Mike, you know, you may get to the point where you're financially able to support more than just amnesty. And if so, World Vision, Save the Children, you know, those are the kinds of humanist, I thought, or let me change it, humanitarian organizations. But World Vision claims that it is primarily a religious organization, a religious corporation, no less. A religious corporation. I wonder who their CEO is. I always thought that the CEO of religious organizations should be God, and the COO should be Jesus, but apparently that's not the case here. Or it is the case, and it simply means that those of us who don't subscribe to, I wonder if they would allow Jews to contribute money, or Muslims, or, oh, never mind.
I guess I take it out to its ridiculous conclusion. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Malloy, 26 before the hour. You have heard a lot of these teabag candidates, this freak who's running in Nevada against Harry Reid, the freak who's running in Alaska, or I don't know, has that been decided yet? Did Murkowski lose? Not that she's any blessing either. But the teabag candidates, who else? Murkowski, the guy in Kentucky, Rand Paul. There's so many of these people scattered around. They're like cockroaches. You don't see them until the lights go on. Then they, they're all over the place. Well, all of them have one thing in common. They all talk about, well, they're going to cut the deficit. Well, they're going to restore the country. Well, they're going to get rid of all this spending. Well, they're going to, And you listen to this hog snot, and I don't know about you. It's so tiresome. I am so over hearing these phony bastards prattling on about they're going to do this, and they're going to stop that, and they're going to end this, and they're going to end that. You know, you never hear them talk about we are going to defund the War Department. You never hear that, do you? Which would save the United States of America $700 billion a year. Take care of every problem we have if we just defunded totally the War Department and maintained our nuclear weapons for you cowardly white people out there who are scared to death that some booger man is going to get you. The commies, no. The Nazis, no. The black people, no. The Muslims, no. The atheists, no. The queers, no. The liberals, no. The Democrats, no. 95% of the problems on this earth are because there are so many scared white people in positions of real power. You know what I'm saying? Of course you do. Of course you do. You just don't want to admit it if you're white. Anyway, I digress. So all these right-wing teabag freakoids, what they talk about, what they're saying is, although they couch it in weird terms, we're going to get rid of Medicare. We're going to get rid of Medicaid. Food stamps. Unemployment comp. Social Darwinism, so that those who will fit in, the fittest, not the strongest, don't misunderstand the term. Survival of the fittest does not mean survival of the strongest. It really doesn't. What it means as a species, as those members of that species that can fit into a new environment most completely. And in that fitting in, they become the fittest and they survive. So in the new American economic model, the fittest will be those who can work for $6 an hour, and that's it. For those who, if they want to stay well, they can put $2 a week into a medical savings account, and at the end of 20 years, they'll have
They'll have, oh, I don't know, what would that be? $2 a week? That would be $100 a year. At the end of 20 years, it'd be, what, 2,000, which would be, what, 2,000? And then they can go get their teeth cleaned. The new fittest are those people who will be able to survive with no expectation of a life expectancy beyond maybe 45, and an infant mortality rate spiking back up to what it was in this country before the beginning of the 19th century. Right? Pleasant outlook. Well, guess what, truth seekers? According to Daily Finance, one in six Americans is now on Medicaid. One in six is now on Medicaid, according to USA Today. And Medicaid is just one of several government anti-poverty programs that have seen large increases in caseloads. Now, why is that? Why is Medicaid? Because nobody can afford health insurance anymore? You think? You think that might have something to do with it? It's a shame that the Obama administration did not have the courage. Did not have the courage when it was rewriting the health insurance rules and regs. It's a shame the Obama administration and the Democratic Party leadership did not have the courage, and damn them for this, did not have the courage to go for single payer, Medicare for all. So now we have one in six on Medicaid. Millions of Americans have lost their jobs during this depression, and large numbers of those have lost their employee-sponsored health insurance. These job losses have cost most Americans who are dealing with this the ability to pay for private health insurance as well. So, it's perhaps unsurprising that now more than 50 million Americans are on Medicaid. 50 million. And also not surprising, the fact that the federal government's outlays on Medicaid jumped 36% in the past 2 years to $273 billion. My God, what a waste of money that is. That would fund the war in Afghanistan for what, 6 months? 4 months? What a waste of money. These rat bastards who are on Medicaid, these scum suckers, they're taking money away from the War Department. How dare they? Oops, excuse me. Excuse me. That jump in enrollment in Medicaid, according to USA Today, comes well ahead of 2014, when the new health care reform law will expand Medicaid's enrollment criteria. According to a recent study by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Medicaid enrollment is projected to increase by 15.9 million by 2019. Oh, my goodness. So that would go from 50 million people on Medicaid to 70 million or 66 million people on Medicaid. My goodness. With the economy climbing out of recession much more slowly than had been expected. This is a climb out? Oh, my God. The U.S. unemployment rate still high and the government expanding eligibility. USA Today lists other anti-poverty programs for low-income individuals and families that have expanded since the downturn began. More than 40 million people now get food stamps, an increase of nearly 50%. Nearly four times as many people are receiving unemployment insurance, and 18% more people are on welfare. Now, you know, almost every night you hear me read for you a piece by our economic affairs advisor or correspondent, Prairie 2, Bruce Enberg. And I made comments and I get emails from you folks who say, oh, it's always so negative. Well, what about this? Maybe what he writes is perceived as being negative because there's no way to spin this. There's no way. 40 million people now on food stamps. Four times as many people are receiving unemployment insurance as, say, 5 years ago. 18% more people are on welfare.
Oh, well, we have to continue our adventures in Afghanistan and Iraq because we are fighting for freedom isn't free. Don't you left-wingers forget that, you dirty damn communists, you. We have to fight over there in Afghanistan. If we don't fight there, we have to fight on the streets of Baltimore. Or Baltimore. Or Baltimore. Just think about it. Every single financial problem that this country is dealing with now, on an immediate basis, I'm not talking about long term, I'm talking about immediate basis, every single problem, financial problem that we're dealing with could be solved, not fixed, not temporarily stanched, but solved if we would dismantle the War Department. Now, what would happen if all of a sudden we said, okay, that's it, and started a mad dash of our troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq? I mean, just bring the boys home. Bring them home. Bring them home now. What would happen? What would happen? Would the enemy be at our gates the following week? Would there be hordes of Muslims storming Galveston Island, Texas? Would they be landing on Manhattan Island, New York? Would they be hitting Catalina Island off the coast of California? Would they be going to, what's the island off of Seattle, where I was a couple of weeks ago? Bainbridge Island. Would they be storming Bainbridge and Catalina and Manhattan and Galveston? Would that happen if we decided we can't afford to continue this madness? For some reason, I just don't think it would. We'll be right back.
But what if the enemy isn't in a distant land? What if the enemy lies behind the voice of command? The sound of war is a child's cry. Behind tinted windows they just drive by. And all I know is that those that are going to be killed aren't those that preside on Capitol Hill. I told him don't fill the front lines of their war. Those aren't worth dying for. And he's...
The sky was the color.
It is 10 before the hour. Finally, the egg farm situation. Oh, my God. The egg farm. I'll tell you what. I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but anybody who buys commercially raised eggs or commercially produced eggs, because they're not raised, they're squeezed out of chickens, you know, just anybody who buys that garbage, I won't say you're deserving of being made sick, because that would be unfair. But you're running one hell of a risk. We buy eggs, we eat eggs, and we buy them from locally produced chickens that run around yards scratching up grubs and bugs and getting it on with a rooster every now and then, you know. And as a result, we've never had a problem with eggs, chicken eggs. Federal inspections of the two Iowa egg farms at the heart of this recall, hundreds of millions of eggs that were poisoned. The inspectors found what's being referred to as, quote, widespread safety problems, end quote. Widespread safety problems? Including barns infested with flies, maggots, and rodents, the FDA said yesterday.
flies, maggots, rodents. They left out corpses, chickens that have been tortured, chickens that are just mindless. There's nothing there. There's nothing, not that they have minds, but whatever instinctive reactions and actions that they had are gone. Additional problems, according to the FDA, include overflowing poop pits, improper worker sanitation, wild birds roosting around feed bins. A deputy commissioner for food at the FDA said of the reports released on Monday, quote, clearly the observations here reflect significant deviations from what's expected, end quote. What does that mean? What does that mean? Here's a solution. Here's a solution. And this is not going to be pleasant. I'm sorry. It's not going to be pleasant. It's going to be terrible. But it is a solution. Get the people out of those bird factories and shut the doors with all the insane birds inside. Douse the buildings in gasoline and burn them. Sorry. Because in the process of doing that, we will destroy hundreds of millions of chickens. Okay. Hundreds of thousands of chickens. And I think the chickens thus burned alive will go on to chicken heaven, where they will be very grateful that they were free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty. We're free at last. Then take the people who set up these Auschwitz chicken egg camps. No offense to my Jewish brethren and sistren. No offense. And put them in jail for the rest of their lives because they are pigs. They are providing filth disguised as food for Americans to eat. So get rid of them. What are you going to do? Fine them? Well, what's the fine going to be? How many times has this DeCoster freak been fined? The guy who's responsible at Wright County Egg and Hillendale Farms. And how many times can you find somebody? Look at the Koch brothers who fund every neo-fascist organization in America. How often can you find them? It's just the cost of doing business, like dead people, like soldiers in Afghanistan. This is collateral damage. This is what capitalism says. Oh, well, you know, so a few rotten eggs got out. A few rotten eggs got out. Burn the buildings. Burn the chickens. I'm sorry. I'm going to just hideously offend animal rights people now, of which I'm probably one. I certainly don't believe in torturing or hurting our dumb cousins. But what else are you going to do with hundreds of thousands of chickens who are... I mean, they're not really alive, are they? They're animated. They're zombie chickens. They're producing eggs, if you can call them that. You know, squeezing out one after another. Their bodies are infested with disease. As the eggs squeeze out into troughs filled with feces and disease and germs and rats and maggots, burn them! And then start over. With small family farms, keep capitalism out of the food production business. Make them go away. Then go to the Chicago Board of Trade, get all the people out, and then blow it up! And let the market determine how much corn and wheat and soybeans will cost. Not a bunch of smart-ass white boys who stand on the trading floor of the Chicago Board of Trade and go, 169, 1,000, check it out. And completely screw with the food production system. Oh, never mind, never mind. Let the chickens live. Let them live. Oh, what the hell? I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. I'm going to run upstairs and fix an omelet. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.